From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting as French President Emmanuel Macron wrapped up a three-day state visit. He told the U.S. media he expects President Donald Trump to reimpose sanctions, effectively pulling the U.S. out of the 2015 International Iran Nuclear Agreement.
Mais c'est en même temps de construire un cadre diplomatique.
The French leader acknowledged a disagreement on the matter, but he held out hope Mr. Trump would back his plan for a new deal with Iran. Earlier, in remarks to a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress, Mr. Macron, who's advocating that new deal, encompassing the concerns not addressed in the original pact, urged the U.S. not to abandon it.
It is true to say that this agreement may not address all concerns, and very important concerns. This is true. But we should not abandon it without having something substantial and more substantial instead. That's my position.
In Geneva, the U.S. non-proliferation envoy Christopher Ford said the U.S. hopes to remain in the accord.
We're not aiming to renegotiate the JCPOA or reopen it or change its terms. We're seeking a supplemental agreement that would in some fashion layer upon it a series of additional rules that help answer restrictions or terms or whatever you might want to call it, parameters that will help answer these challenges more effectively.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel is expected to urge Mr. Trump to remain in the Iranian pact when she visits the White House Friday. Wednesday, Iran's President Hassan Rouhani ruled out any changes to the agreement. In Nigeria's central Benue state, another 11 people were reportedly killed a day after 18, including two priests, were shot dead by suspected Muslim cattle herders. Wednesday's attack left 11 Hausa traders dead in Makurdi, and two mosques were reportedly razed to the ground. This is VOA News. The two Korean leaders are preparing for a historic summit Friday at the truce village of Panmunjom and will be a key indicator of how serious North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un is at preparing to denuclearize. John DeLurie, an associate professor at South Korea's Yonsei University, said Mr. Kim is a different kind of North Korean leader.
Kim Jong-un is quite different from his father. For example, on economic issues, he didn't grow up in the good old days when the socialist economy really worked for North Korea. So he has a fundamentally different orientation. He's letting a lot of the market capitalist tendencies go. He's more similar to the kinds of leaders that we see in China and Vietnam when it comes to economic growth.
DeLurie said Mr. Kim's intentions on the future of his country's nuclear program won't be clear until he meets President Donald Trump, a meeting expected to take place in late May or early June. International donors meeting in Brussels pledged more than $4 billion in humanitarian aid for Syria and countries that have sheltered refugees. But the pledges are lower than the more than $7 billion the UN had sought. UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs Mark Lowcock holds out hope for further assistance.
A number of important donors have not yet been in a position to confirm their financing for 2018 because of the status of their internal budgetary discussions. And that includes the United States, which has been providing something more than $1 billion a year in humanitarian assistance to Syria and the region over recent years.
On the ground in Syria, experts from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons Wednesday visited a second site in Douma and took samples following a suspected toxic munitions attack earlier this month. The U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments Wednesday on the legality of President Donald Trump's travel ban limiting people from mostly Muslim-majority countries over security concerns. Lawyer Neil Katyal argued on behalf of the state of Hawaii.
Can we have a president that says, in the terms he has, things like a complete and total shutdown of Muslim immigration should happen in our United States?
The travel ban has been challenged repeatedly in lower courts, a ruling expected from the High Court at the end of June. In Armenia, thousands were back on the streets Wednesday after the opposition accused the ruling party of refusing to cede power following the surprise resignation of newly appointed prime minister and former president Serge Sarkisian. The acting prime minister, meanwhile, suggested calling a parliamentary election. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres Wednesday, according to sources, has selected Switzerland's ambassador to Germany to be his special envoy to Myanmar, also known as Burma. The country is facing international criticism over security crackdown that's forced hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims to flee. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone has a new Speaker of Parliament, but the opposition said the election is a threat to democracy.
Whatever has been happening in Sierra Leone is a complete travesty of democracy. And this has gone all the way into Parliament. Democracy is under threat in Sierra Leone.
Karamo Kaba is the Deputy National Organizing Secretary of the opposition All People's Congress Party of Sierra Leone. But the ruling SLPP says the election of Abbas Bondo was in line with the constitution. Nigeria gets low marks when it comes to respect for the rights of its citizens. And who killed two bodyguards of South Sudan Vice President James Wani Iga on Wednesday?
The convoy of soldiers of the vice president coming from Lobola to Juba got ambushed by criminals on the way. And the officer called Jada, and then Morbe plus one woman got killed in that ambush.
Callisto Lado is the acting spokesman for South Sudan Vice President James Wani Iga. Tanzania is today celebrating the 54th anniversary of Union Day. And we'll examine the growing risk of cyber crime in Zimbabwe. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Sierra Leone Parliament on Wednesday elected Dr. Abbas Bondo of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, as the new Speaker of Parliament. Bondo, a former Secretary General of the Economic Community of West African States, was elected unopposed. But Karama Kaba, Deputy National Organizing Secretary of the opposition All People's Congress Party, says Bondo's election is a threat to democracy in Sierra Leone and Africa in general. You see, the opposition APC has 68 seats in the 146-member parliament and 49 for the ruling SLPP. But before the vote, the clerk announced that 16 APC members could not be sworn in because of a court injunction issued on Monday against them. Kaba says APC members will not cooperate with the new speaker until their concerns are addressed.
Whatever has been happening in Sierra Leone since the 27th of March, the runoff election in the Republic of Sierra Leone, is a complete travesty of democracy. And this has gone all the way into Parliament. Democracy is under threat in Sierra Leone. And democracy under threat in Sierra Leone is democracy under threat in Africa and the rest of the world. Now, what we have here in Sierra Leone, the Sierra Leone People's Party, they won the president. The All People's Congress have majority in the parliament, but the ruling party cannot settle for that. And they have come up with convoluted and unscrupulous methods of just going to kangaroo court with injunctions just to deprive certain number of our parliamentarians in parliament so they can go ahead and elect a speaker who will not be represented by the people. Today, as a matter of fact, paramilitary officers were called upon to throw out 8 members of the All People's Congress, which is the APC party, the opposition party in parliament, out of parliament. They were bundled out of parliament in a very brutal way. And as we speak right now, one parliamentarian by the name of Mohamed Bagura is now in one of the major hospitals in Juwe fighting for his life. He was brutalized in a very bad way.
You said that 16 members of the All People's Congress Party, an injunction was put on them. Could you tell me why the court injunction became necessary?
The court injunction, that is exactly what I am emphasizing here, that is a travesty of democracy. We have gone through an election. They have won in a very controversial and questionable way the presidency, and we said, okay, to prevent scuffle, to prevent conflict, we settled on that. And we won majority of the parliament. They couldn't settle on that. In their own way, by all means necessary, they want the Speaker of the House. So they have to do funny things. They have to go puzzle the judiciary so that they can get injunctions. The main purpose of the injunction is to impeach us, just to get the injunction so that these people will not be present to stop them from going to parliament so that they'll be able to fortify an election of a speaker who will not be represented by the people of the Republic of Sierra Leone.
So what is the APC going to do? Dr. Bundu has been elected. Would you consider him as your speaker because you did not take part to elect him?
Well, today the Bundu is our parliamentarians out of parliament, and we will continue a policy of no cooperation with them until this is addressed. There will be no cooperation.
Mr. Kaba, thank you very much again for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much for having me on Daybreak Africa.
Karamo Kaba is the Deputy National Organizing Secretary of the Opposition or People's Congress Party of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A spokesman for the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, says the election of Abbas Bundu as Speaker of Parliament was in line with the Constitution of Sierra Leone. Bundu, a former Secretary General of the Economic Community of West African States, was elected unopposed. But the opposition All People's Congress Party, the APC, says Bundu's election is a threat to democracy in Sierra Leone and Africa in general. Lahai Lawrence Lima, the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling SLPP, says 16 APC members of parliament who were not allowed to vote did not satisfy the constitutional requirement to be elected into parliament because a challenge to their election is pending in the court.
The process by which the Speaker of Sierra Leone was elected today in the House of Parliament runs consistent with the laws of the land, and it runs consistent with provisions of the national constitution and other statutory provisions of the country.
Why do you say that when your party does not have majority in power and the opposition All People's Congress has 68 seats in parliament? The claim is that you pull a trick on the opposition by getting a court injunction to remove 16 members of the party from parliament so that you will be able to get the majority you need to elect the speaker.
Well, even if the APC members in parliament were in parliament today, the SLPP certainly was going to win the Speaker of Parliament elections. And quite apart from that, the SLPP will not deliberately move towards removing members of parliament outside the house. But since it is a job of honorable members, where, of course, you expect people going to that house should meet the requirement of the laws of the land for them to be properly elected and for them to be properly be in the house. So these people should have known that much as they deprived others who have not met the constitutional requirements on the Tusin issue, that is, those who have dual nationality were deprived of not actually being awarded Simba. The same provision that deprives people not getting Simba because of their duality of citizenship is the same provision that says also whoever receives salary from the consolidated fund who has not resigned his job 12 months leading to the time he is actually showing his interest for being elected as a member of parliament ought not to be elected in the first place. So what those who have contested with those people actually have done is to actually petition against them that they were not fit and proper, or they did not actually satisfy the constitutional provision for them to be elected into parliament. And you would not have somebody to be elected in parliament who has a petition case against him or her, especially so when the judiciary of the land has actually passed an interim injunction against their representation in parliament. So until their case is heard and a verdict is actually being given by the court, then they should not be allowed to even be sworn in the House of Parliament. So, and quite apart from that also, in 2012, they actually did the same.
Mr. Lima, are you saying that the court injunction that was issued on the 16 APC members of Parliament was issued because they have dual citizenship? Is that correct?
That is not exactly what I'm saying. I just use the duality of citizenship as an example. The APC denied certain of their membership who actually showed up for symbol on the basis that they have dual citizenship, so they will not actually grant them the symbol. What I'm saying in essence is that the same provision of the law, which actually said that anyone who has dual citizenship should not be given a symbol, is that very provision again that says that those who actually are receiving salary from the consolidated fund, who have not resigned their offices 12 months to the time they are actually showing up for election as members of parliament, ought not to be in the House of Parliament. So essentially I'm saying here that some of the people actually who have an interim injunction have been slammed against them, who are receiving salary from the consolidated fund and did not resign their offices as required by the Constitution. And so those people cannot be allowed to actually be in parliament, especially so when their opponents they have contested with have brought in a petition against them in the court.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 26th. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. A recent report by the U.S. government gave low marks to Nigeria for the respect of fundamental human rights of its citizens. The State Department's annual Global Human Rights Survey, released last week, says the Nigerian government has not taken action against offending officials in the administration of President Muhammadu Buhari. Lagos-based human rights activist Charles Madibo shares on the report with reporter Mike Umbonye.
I've taken a cursory look at that report. I think they are right to a very great extent. If I might take it from the perspective of the report, and I go through some of those rights and some of the perceived infractions on those rights, I'll give you an instance. The instance is the right to life. Under this watch, you can see what is happening in Benue State. You can see what is happening in Taraba, in Enugu State. Local governments are being invaded. People are being killing people with impunity. And we have a government with a president in control. And nothing is being done about it. That's an infraction on fundamental rights, right to life.
Do you think this report will top the agenda during President Buhari's visit to America?
I wouldn't know. It depends on the priority of the United States. It depends on what our President Muhammad Buhari is also going to do. If part of his agenda is also to propagate his ambition for a second term, maybe, even if it doesn't top the agenda, I'm sure the United States, being a very democratic government with strong democratic institutions, will also raise the issue of, in fact, it will be their duty to raise the issue of these violations.
The government says it is working to protect rights and denies accusations that it has failed to do so. How do its critics respond?
Well, I think this government has really failed in protecting rights. Let's take, for instance, I just mentioned the right to life. We run a federal executive system. We run a federal presidential system with a central government controlled by the president. He controls the executive, he controls the military, the police, all the apparatus of force, the SSS, the state security, and everything. So the buck must always stop at his table. If people are being killed and all these apparatus are being well funded and they cannot function effectively, the buck stops at the president's table. To that extent, the right to life in virtually most parts of this country has been compromised. So that is a serious infraction on the right to life under his regime. As of the right to liberty, we can see under the guise of corruption, it's all been about corruption. We see that unfettered powers had unconstitutionally been allowed to all manners of paramilitary and military agencies. They arrest you, incarcerate you, they don't mind the order of courts anymore. Look at the issue of the former national security advisor. We have a lot of court orders that he should either be freed or be brought to a court. But up till now, he's still under house arrest, and nobody has been able to do anything about it. So where is the right to liberty? Where is the right to fair hearing? If he has been accused of any offense, take him to court.
That was Charles Madibo, a lawyer and Lagos-based human rights activist. He spoke with reporter Mike Umbonye in Lagos, Nigeria. Two bodyguards of South Sudan's vice president were killed on Wednesday when their vehicle fell into an ambush at Rajaf County outside Juba town. Callisto Lado is acting spokesman in the office of James Wani Iga. Lado says armed men killed the two bodyguards of the vice president and one woman who was in the car that they were using. He says Vice President Wani was not with his bodyguards during the incident.
The convoy of soldiers of the vice president coming from Lobola to Juba got ambushed by criminals on the way. And the officer called Jada, and then Morbe plus one woman got killed in that ambush.
And how far is the area from Juba town where this incident took place?
And this incident took place exactly in Rajaf County. It is in exactly in area called Logo. This after the car left Lokonok and they crossed Langkit and they entered Rajaf County. So when they reached Logo, they got ambushed, and the people who ambushed them are not known to us up to now, because they happened to kill the officer and one other comrade and one woman. And they have also looted whatever was in the car after killing them, and they entered the bushes.
This officer who was killed, what is his rank? Can you tell us a little bit about his rank and how the work he does in the office of the vice president?
Yeah, Comrade Jada is a first lieutenant in the Presidential Guard Unit. He is in the close protection of His Excellency Dr. James Wanega, the vice president of the Republic. He has served for so long in the headquarters of His Excellency Dr. James Wanega. We describe him as a brave officer who is loyal and committed to his service, and actually dedicated to the service for the sake of his people and the country as a whole. So we have really lost a brave and courageous and charismatic officer in the headquarters.
Normally, the office of the VIP traveled with the heavy presence of the military. Was that the case? I mean, was this officer having other colleagues accompanying him on this mission?
There were not many in the car. In the car only has three people: the officer and then the other two comrades, one man and one woman. They were coming from Lokonok to Juba for a specific task. So they have not come in a big number, and they were not armed to the teeth, as people used to describe the movements of people or the soldiers from headquarters to headquarters or from one location to another. They were actually sure that there was no problem on the road, because the road used to be safe, the road used to be okay. But of course, an ambush is an ambush. When the criminals organize and they actually set an intention to do something, they always surprise people in this way.
Was Dr. Wanega in the convoy?
It is worth mentioning that His Excellency Dr. James Wanega, the Vice President of the Republic, is not in Juba as of now. He is in Bahr al-Ghazal, in Kwajok in particular. So he has gone there to visit Bahr al-Ghazal region and then sensitize the people about the peace process. But of course, he's now aware of what happened.
That was Callisto Lado, acting spokesman in the office of South Sudan's Vice President James Wanega. He spoke with John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan In Focus program. Today is the 54th anniversary of the Union of Tanzania and Zanzibar. But opposition members have criticized the government of President John Magufuli for what they say is his oppressive leadership. Moses Avia Rimana reports from the Tanzanian capital, Dodoma.
April 26 is celebrated every year as Union Day in Tanzania to commemorate the merger of Tanzania and the island nation of Zanzibar in 1964. The mainland section of modern Tanzania, known then as Tanganyika, was colonized by Germany during the late 1800s and became the bulk of German East Africa. But German control soon ended after Germany's defeat in World War I, and Tanganyika became a part of the British Empire. Zanzibar was controlled by the Arab Kingdom of Oman for a long time, but it also became a British protectorate with its very own sultan. John Pombe Magufuli is Tanzania's president.
Na tukashirikiana kwa pamoja.
He says that if countries get along together and look at each other as brothers and sisters together, they can make a stronger regional bloc or continent. The Tanzanian president said the idea of the United Africa can be a reality if Africans are honest with each other.
It's supposed to come from the blood and the heart to cement it inside.
Union Day is a time of patriotic speeches by politicians and parades by school children and various public and private organizations. A large parade is expected to be held today in country's capital city, Dodoma. But there are many other parades held all over the country. Abdullah Hasnu Makame is a member of Tanzania's ruling party, CCM, from Zanzibar.
The founders of the union were actually eyeing to achieve the Pan-Africanism movement, which was going on during that time, that we have to have a united Africa. And we have to defy the borders that were not there existing prior to the arrival of the people who came from outside Africa and came to rule the Africans in their own land.
Even though Tanzania ranked as one of the peaceful countries in the region, challenges still lie ahead as at least 7 people were arrested on Wednesday for their role in possible political demonstration. Peter Msigwa is an opposition member from Chadema Political Party.
Different people from different areas have been arrested. The government is accusing them that they are planning Ferraris. And that's something else is weird in our country, because there is poor governance, there is abuse of human rights, and there's no democracy in the country. So before we talk even about union, we have to talk about human rights, democracy.
The name Tanzania combines the first syllable of the names of the two formerly separate states, Tanganyika and Zanzibar, and symbolizes national unity, which was brought about 50 years ago and is being celebrated today. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Dodoma, Tanzania.
One of Zimbabwe's biggest online content producers recently had its Facebook account hacked. It lost control of the page, which reaches hundreds of thousands every month. Reporter Kuzai Vanaveshi takes a look at the growing risk of cybercrime in Zimbabwe.
Bus Stop TV produces comic skits and news reports that cover social and political issues. Its videos often go viral on social media platforms Zimbabweans use. Over the years, it has gathered a huge following online, and that might have led to the attack on its Facebook page. Lucky Aaron is the co-founder and producer of Bus Stop TV, and he says something that seemed innocent led to the company losing control of its Facebook page.
We received a message from an account called JC Miller requesting that we should partner with that account to put sponsored adverts on our Facebook page. Then he sent a link for us to follow and create a Facebook business account.
Aaron says after that, things went wrong.
In that process of following that link and understanding how Facebook business works, that's how we lost our account. They managed to fish information and use my account to get to our page and remove all the admins.
The page had over 110,000 likes, and Aaron says it was reaching over 500,000 views a month. People outside Zimbabwe say they can view the page, but for fans in Zimbabwe, it's blocked in Zimbabwe. Chris Musodza is with Digital Society in Zimbabwe, a volunteer organization of technology experts working to protect rights online.
What has happened to Bus Stop TV, it affects many of us because, lack of access to information. We rely on such platforms as Zimbabweans. But this has been happening for many people, and this is not the first time I've heard of it. This has been happening for a while.
Musodza adds that Zimbabwe needs some form of legislation to protect citizens. As internet usage rises in the country, more people are exposed to criminal activity, he says. Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament business and other political events. He says it's worrying that cybersecurity is not a priority for Zimbabweans.
Cybersecurity issues are not something that are high priority on ordinary Zimbabweans, but it's something that I think civil society organizations and corporates and individuals need to work hard to sensitize people.
Dodo says that online crime, however, should not be an excuse for government to clamp down on citizens, infringe on the right of free expression, or increase online surveillance. For VOA, this is Kudzai Nawashe from Harare.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Sierra Leone Parliament on Wednesday elected Dr. Abbas Bondu of the ruling Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP, as the new Speaker of Parliament. But the opposition APC says Dr. Bondu's election is a threat to democracy in Sierra Leone. And that's it for this Thursday, April 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a good day.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.